It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 153 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So Carson, we've talked a lot about in past episodes how jousting is not a great strategy to have in X-Wing, particularly when you're wanting to play at the tournament level and do well and start to make those top cuts.
Right, and a mantra of mine has been don't joust or stop jousting. But that's a little easier said than done. So today we're going to break down what that means and how you can go about not jousting.
And we're also going to be talking about one of the lists and strategies you can adopt in order to try a strategy that's more effective than jousting. We're going to talk about flying an ace list like the list me and Carson flew at the recent Glendale, Arizona System Open, where Carson took that list to the top 8 cut. And while this is kind of a twofold episode, really, we're looking at it as kind of a diagnosis and a prescription. So we're looking at the diagnosis of people who struggle with jousting in their X-Wing list and avoiding that tendency to just throw ships at each other and roll dice. We're going to define that, and we're also going to look at one of the possible strategies you can adopt to avoid jousting.
Right. If you've been thinking recently, wow, you know, my dice are just so bad, I should be using the dice app instead, you know, maybe give this episode a listen, and you can think of some more constructive things to be doing with your time.
All right, so to start this one out, before we get into flying aces, and before we really get into what's wrong with jousting, I think it's really important that we clarify and define our terms by what we mean by jousting in X-Wing.
Right, jousting is a term that's, you know, been around from, you know, the beginning of the game that very aptly describes a certain playstyle.
And it's actually been in the language of X-Wing for a long time. It kind of meant something different early on in first edition, where there was an old theory of X-Wing that had different pillars of ship types that supported the game, and the Jouster was one of those. Even in first edition, the game evolved over time. So the game we see in second edition now, you're not really going for a specific ship because it's a quote-unquote Jouster. That doesn't mean we don't still see jousting as an active strategy. And there's actually a reason it's a very commonly adopted strategy, because I think in a lot of ways, it's the first way we learn to play X-Wing.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was for me. You know, when I first started playing, it was on a small coffee table that, you know, definitely wasn't 3 feet long. I was more like half that. So, I mean, you basically started in combat.
Yeah, and on my side, I played on a lot of non-uniform play spaces, either way too wide, like 4x4, or narrow coffee tables like you did, Carson. And when I started, I also often didn't include asteroids, because I would be playing with a lot of people who, even though I wasn't that experienced at the game, people who were just becoming familiar with the game. So I thought, oh, it's going to be easier to learn if we don't use asteroids and risk the potential rollover damage and whatnot. But what you quickly discover is when you remove those elements, especially when you're first learning to play the game, really the game just breaks down into, well, we're going to point ships at each other, we're going to roll dice, and we're going to hope that we get a lot of hits and that you don't get a lot of evades. And that's one factor, I think, why this is really just what people adopt when they first start to play the game, especially if they're not playing in an environment where people are playing actively in a competitive way. I think another factor, too, is when you're first learning X-Wing, you don't have a good familiarity with the way maneuvers work and the way templates will go. You're not good at estimating exactly where your ship's going to land. And that compounds itself because that also means you're probably not good at effectively using boost and barrel rolls, which is one of the main ways you can flank and avoid that head-on confrontation.
Well, and I think another way that, you know, jousting gets ingrained into our brain as a, you know, a successful playstyle is, you know, when you do have those efficiency ships and, you know, you get a good joust, you know, you line up all your arcs on your opponent and the dice roll your way, you know, it can be very successful.
Yeah, and I mean, and that is what jousting is. It's not, it's a strategy only in that it's a method of play. It is really just pointing ships at each other and rolling attack dice and hoping for good outcomes. There's not much more to say beyond that. And like you're saying, Carson, it really comes down to, it feels like an effective strategy when it works. So let's say you put 4 B-wings into a list, middling pilot skills. That means they each have 3 attack dice, so you could potentially roll 12 attack dice at your opponent's ships if all your B-wings have that opportunity. So let's say this is an ideal scenario where you get to roll all 12 of those attack dice against your opponent's TIE fighter. And let's say you roll all hits. Every time you roll those dice, you get 3 hit results, and you've rolled a total of 12 hits on 12 dice. Well, if you're in that scenario, suddenly it feels like, hey, this was a really effective strategy. I put out so much damage.
Right. I mean, if everything went perfect there, you took out 4 TIE fighters.
Absolutely. So that would feel effective. On the flip side, you might enter a scenario where even with, you know, a focus token on each of those attacks, you might roll hit blank blank or focus blank blank with all 4 of your B-Wings, and suddenly you've generated 4 hits total. Might not even kill a TIE fighter. They might evade them all. And you might at that point even get mad at the dice and look at the variance and say, that's responsible for the loss here. But really, it goes to a previous step before you reach to the point where you're rolling the dice. You chose to engage. You put yourself in a position where you're depending on the variance. And that's one of the main reasons why jousting is really, at its core, not an effective strategy in X-Wing.
Right. And so, you know, when we're talking about discouraging people from jousting, it's in the spectrum of tournament play where you're going to be playing, you know, 6 rounds of Swiss, and you need to win most of those rounds to make the cut. You know, usually you need 5 wins out of those 6 rounds, which means if you're engaging in a strategy that is a bit more varianced, then, you know, you're going to trend toward the average of that, where you go, you know, 3-3. Or if you've a really efficient jousting list, you'll go 4-2.
And while that might make for a winning record, even a lot of the time, that's not going to make for a lot of top cut breaks. And I think that's really important, because even as we're looking at X-Wing right now, one of the lists that is a strong contender in both the extended format and the hyperspace format is the Triple Upsilon list. We've talked about this previously, but if you look at the core of that list, it's really a jousting list. You're putting your ships out there really quickly, really aggressively, ships with a lot of attack dice, and then they get some kind of modification. That list is terrifying even to players like me and Carson, where we have to really put the pressure on us, given that these ships can reach almost anywhere in that first round and potentially lay out a lot of damage. And even though that list is upsetting to a lot of players, annoying to fly against, we also have to look at the factor that even at, say, the Glendale System Open where we were at, this list was available and only one triple Upsilon list broke into that top cut.
Right. And, you know, when you do look at cuts, one of the most consistent elements of lists that, you know, are surviving through Swiss and making it into the cut rounds are lists that leverage maneuvering.
And maneuvering is at the core of what X-Wing is. Jousting ignores that element of the game, but maneuvering is at the core of X-Wing, and that's really what is most important. And I think that's why we don't see lists like the Triple Upsilon list just completely taking over these top cuts. A lot of the lists we see in those top cuts are more nuanced, or they're going to be lists that either emphasize control elements or currently lists that are ace lists that depend on a lot of really strong, maybe not the most durable pieces, but ships that can really leverage the mobility and the maneuvering of X-Wing.
Right. And maneuvering is the part of the game where you're making decisions. It's the part of your gameplay that, you know, you can improve. The thing that will get you to win, you know, games consistently is, you know, if you set the right dials and, you know, choose the right repositioning actions at the right time, those are factors that will consistently win you a game.
And one kind of truth that I've always followed in X-Wing is the idea that when you're looking at a loss, especially losses that you can attribute to bad dice variance to some degree or to a large degree, you always want to look at the takeaways you get from that match. A good takeaway from a match that you lose is not that, oh, the dice messed up or I didn't roll enough evades when I should have rolled more with my modification. Even if that's true, even if it was a statistical anomaly that you didn't get an outcome that was even average, that's not going to improve your game. That's not going to make you a better player. You have to look at the elements that you can control, the dials you set, the maneuvers and repositioning options that you choose. Those are the factors that you can change and adjust. And even in games where we see extremely bad dice variance, there are, I can promise you, without a doubt, better choices that you could have made along the way.
Right. And, you know, a lot of us have been playing this game for quite a while, and, you know, we've seen the game take a pretty dramatic turn in this past year with a shift away from consistency in your die rolls meaning that the die variance is a lot more real. But that just means that, you know, maneuvering using those repositioning actions becomes even more important.
And well, today we're going to talk a little bit about flying an ace list. There are still a lot of great strategies you can choose, even if it's not an ace list. That is a much better, stronger option than just going with the jousting strategy of rolling as many dice as you can and hoping for good outcomes.
Right, but if you're really trying to break your jousting habit and force yourself to learn a different style of play, playing an ace list, you know, like the resistance ace list that Tim and I have been flying, is a great way to do it. And so that's why we're going to talk about aces today.
So before we dive too far into talking about ace lists and why they're a good choice and how to generally fly an ace list, Carson wants to do something he loves doing, which is to start off with a boring chess analogy. So Carson, you've got the floor.
Well, Tim, I can't really talk about ace play without talking about at least some chess pieces. So, you know, in chess, you have your pawns, your knights, your bishops, your rooks, your queen and king. And, you know, these pieces can be paralleled to X-Wing ships pretty darn well. You know, all the pieces move a little differently. And when you're looking at strategic chess play, we put certain values on each of the pieces. And what that value often equates to is that piece's late game potential. So this value you give, you know, 1 point for a pawn and 8 points for a queen means, you know, that the end game, that queen is worth, you know, 8 pawns, which is, you know, maybe that one ship is worth, you know, your whole tie swarm there.
And as much as I tease, the chess comparison actually does work here. As long as you acknowledge the distinction that separate from chess, where a lot of the strategy elements come into play, X-Wing is unique in that you're not playing with a standard set of pieces, you're getting to choose your pieces. So rather than having that full array of 8 pawns and then a wide assortment of different pieces, you get to choose. Do I fly a swarm list, which would be like having 8 pawns, or do I get to fly an ace list, which is like having queens and rooks?
Right. So when, you know, when we're talking about aces, they're going to be your more expensive chess pieces. You know, I would call an ace a queen and maybe your budget ace a rook. Both the queen and the rook have a very good late game potential. You know, if this is your only piece left on the board, you still have a very good chance to win that game.
And that makes trading scenarios in X-Wing, which still do come up from time to time, where you have to, you know, let one of your pieces get destroyed in order to take one of your opponents, that changes the value there. So when you're flying a bunch of ships in X-Wing that are more expensive investments, those more expensive pieces like the queen equivalent we're looking at here, the trades become different. You can still trade your ships, but you have to weigh those costs very carefully. Since your pieces are so expensive that when you have to trade, you want to make sure you're getting a good value for that trade.
Right. You know, in one of my games in Glendale, I got an initiative destroy on a TIE Phantom, but then the 3 remaining Phantoms answered back and took down my Poe. And I was like, oh, suddenly this is not a very good trade. You know, I traded one, you know, weaker ship for my expensive ace.
And the reason this distinction is important is because it affects the way you use the pieces, right? You're going to be way more, I wouldn't say cautious, but you're going to be way more careful and deliberate in the way you use your expensive aces when it comes to potentially trading or putting yourself in scenarios where you're going to exchange ships with an opponent.
I don't know, Tim. Cautious might be a very good word for it.
I think the one distinction that is important in this comparison is that the chess analogy does kind of break up a little bit, and we don't want to confuse things here because we can call a ship an ace, which would be, you know, equivalent in cost to what you would call your queen piece. But you might also have a ship in an actual similar point range, literally in X-Wing points, that I would not call an ace. So if you're going to dump 90 to 120 points into a Kylo Ren, a ship that I would call an ace ship.
Absolutely.
That is not the same as investing that same amount of points, 90 to 120, into a Millennium Falcon, because they have, those ships have different play styles and different roles in the game. So that's one distinction. So when we're talking about ace lists today and ace ships today, we're looking at a specific class of ships that have a certain set of characteristics to varying degrees.
Right. You know, when I'm classifying X-Wing ships as certain chess pieces, my main category is what is their end game potential? Because that's very important for me for list building. I want my ships, you know, whatever I end up with at the end of the game, as long as I have a ship on the board, I want to still have a fighting chance.
So now that we've gotten through the bulk of your chess analogies, though I'm sure you'll find a way to squeeze them in here in the next half an hour, let's talk about the characteristics of an ace ship in X-Wing. Because I think it's kind of a hard thing to pin down exactly, because I think people who've played this game for a long time, like you and me, we can evaluate a ship, look at it quickly, look at not only the chassis, but the pilot and the actions they're bringing and the upgrades they can bring. And we get a general feel for, okay, this is an ace ship, this is not. And there's not always a perfectly defined list of characteristics that make a ship an ace or not an ace. Because we'll see, you know, ships that stand out as exceptions to the rest of the pilots in their chassis that, oh yeah, this pilot in this ship is an ace. All the other pilot options are not.
Right. For me, there is one major characteristic of an ace, and that is mobility. You know, if you think about a character in an RPG and you have your stat bars, the mobility bar of an ace is all the way maxed out.
And mobility is also a hard thing to pin down in X-Wing, but there are a few traits you can look at. And it's kind of interesting seeing aces in X-Wing where they might not all be equivalent in these like subcategories of mobility, but the fact that they really excel in one can often push them all the way so that they become an ace as opposed to just your run-of-the-mill fighter. But when we're breaking down mobility, and more specifically, not only the potential for mobility, but the ability to use it through your upgrades and through your actions, an important factor is the movement dial.
Right. So when I'm looking at a maneuver dial for an ace, what I want is a wide range of speeds. I want to be able to go fast, and I also want the ability to go slow. I want my opponent to have a wide range of guessing of where my ship might land.
And that range of speeds is really defining. You'll see some ship platforms that otherwise might have a pretty good selection of maneuvers, but if they only favor either the really slow or the really fast speeds, that might limit their potential, because you can see situations where ships that have to move really quickly can find themselves in scenarios that are not ideal. Their opponent can predict their maneuvers more precisely because they can see, all right, they have to go at least this fast. Whereas when you get to a ship like a T-70, which has a pretty strong dial, they have such a great, amazing range of speeds they can go. They can go one straight and keep it real short, maybe barrel roll back, or they can go four forward and then bank boost to really get some range there. So having the potential for both of those is really important in an ace.
Absolutely. And you also do want not just a range of speeds, but also maneuver types. You know, so like the Resistance A-Wings having access to blue turns means, you know, not only could I be, you know, go 2, 3, 4, 5 straight and clear stress, but I could also, you know, cut in hard 2 or do, you know, a 3 bank, which just gives you a lot of different possibilities for where you might land. Or if we're looking at the T-70s, you know, having the K-turn or the Talon roll really does give you a lot of options. And these options make it difficult for your opponent to anticipate your maneuver, which then allows you to leverage, you know, some repositioning actions to gain even farther advantage. You know, if your opponent doesn't put their ship in the right spot, if they don't properly guess you, well, then you can create a really punishing scenario through your mobility.
But movement dials are just the first factor when we're looking at mobility, and mobility really being the most important characteristic of ace ships. Another factor you need to look at is the repositioning actions and options. So a lot of the analogies we're going to use today are going to focus on a list we're very familiar with right now, Poe, Nian Num, both in T-70s, along with Lula Lampar in a RZ-2 A-Wing. But this list, all three of those ships have really good repositioning options. On the T-70 side of things, Poe has a great selection of options thanks to integrated S-foils, access to both boost and barrel roll, along with Poe's pilot ability, being able to take 2 actions in a round, enables Poe to boost and barrel roll in a round. So boost and barrel roll, huge factors in seeing if something is an ace ship or not.
Right, and you know, Lulo in a Resistance A-Wing can do the same thing, you know, do a barrel roll, link it into a boost action. And you know, Nian Num can only really do one repositioning action normally, but you know, you give him the black one title and then you also get access to the slam, and you know, of course, pattern analyzer, things can get pretty complicated, and yeah, you could boost and barrel roll if everything goes right.
And that's a factor too when we're looking at ships outside of the Resistance. If they have a really powerful repositioning action like slam or cloaking and decloaking, those can be factors that attribute to an ace ship as well. Because you look at something like Whisper, who has the option to cloak and decloak. Well, suddenly you're getting the effect of two repositions. You can cloak, decloak, and then still barrel roll in that turn. So that's going to be a huge factor in ace ships.
Right. And, you know, of course, if those ships have those good reposition actions, well, they also want high initiative so they can leverage the advantage of those repositioning actions.
And high initiative really is a strong factor in a lot of different areas of X-Wing, but it's really important here for aces because it's a simple thing, but it's an important thing to remember. High initiative allows you to generally move last or move later in the activation order. And that is important for some pretty simple reasons. It allows you to react more actively. If your ships are at those higher initiatives, like 5 or 6, they're going to react to all the lower initiative ships. And that's really important, especially when we're combining that with repositioning options, where you have different directions and final positions you can go.
Right. There's a reason the Resistance A-Wings are much more successful aces than the Rebel A-Wings. And that's because they have access to higher initiative pilots.
And while a lot of ace ships are going to fall into that 5 to 6 initiative range or are going to be able to both boost and barrel roll in a turn or get multiple repositioning actions, there are some ace ships, things I would definitely put in the ace category, that are able to get around this by having unique movement options. So if you look at someone like Countess Riad in the TIE Defender, even though that's an initiative 4 ship, since it has ways to shake up its maneuvers, it can help compensate for that lower initiative.
Right. And, you know, Nia Nub's going to be in that same category. I mean, he's still got a pretty good initiative, but he can play fine against initiative 6 ships because he still has a movement advantage. You know, clearing that stress token opens up those K turns or Talon rolls and allows you to even take repositioning actions off of them.
So mobility just being the first factor here, but we spent a lot of time on that just because we want to emphasize how important it is. Those 4 factors, the movement dial, the repositioning options, the high initiative, and the unique movement potential, those are all factors that tie into mobility. So when you're picking a ship, this is the paramount factor. This is the most important factor that you want to be aware of.
But aces aren't solely mobility. It is still the major factor, but they have some other defining characteristics like the initiative attack order. Ships with a high initiative have the advantage of being able to destroy ships with lower initiative before they have a chance to engage.
And as we've already defined, high initiative is really a key factor in mobility. So your ace ships generally are going to have those higher initiatives. And that, obviously, initiative applies to so many scenarios here. And the attack order is important because it gives you the opportunity to take calculated risks. And even if you don't have the positional advantage or you can avoid attacks, it gives you an opportunity to remove threats before they can negatively impact you.
Right. And this is one of those things when we talked about, you know, the late game potential of an ace. This initiative advantage in the engagement phase does give them a pretty strong advantage in the late game. You know, as ships get to lower hit points and one attack could finish them off, well, if you're the ship shooting first, that gives you a very dramatic advantage. You can destroy a ship without them rolling any red dice back at you.
I think a really good example here would be to look at a high initiative ace we're using, like Poe Dameron at initiative 6. If he enters a late game scenario where he's left against 2 ships that have lower initiatives, suddenly this puts a lot of pressure on your opponent to make wise decisions with their actions. If they had matched initiatives, they'd be able to be maybe more aggressive, knowing that even if their ship gets destroyed, they'd still be able to return fire at the same initiative. If they're at a lower initiative, they might find themselves making more defensive decisions to guarantee that, well, maybe I'm not maximizing my offense potential. I'm choosing, you know, evades instead of focuses or target locks just to make sure that my ship is alive to shoot. Well, that's a good thing for you because that means there's less modification to the attacks coming back at you just by putting out that threat that you might destroy your opponent's ships before they shoot.
Right. And that means your Poe will be on the table a little bit longer, which is all part of the plan. When we talk about aces, you know, one of the misconceptions is that, you know, they have high damage. This is really kind of the opposite. This is the part that they don't really care about as much. The ace gameplay is just to deal damage over time. You know, you'll eventually destroy them.
And I kind of think about, if you're looking at aces, you could kind of define it in almost a video game-esque set of skill bars, right? Where there are certain categories, mobility, initiative attack order, and damage over time. Those are 3 skills that, like you said, aces exceed at. They're going to be on the high end of those bars. Well, there are certain traits that ace ships are not good at. They're not necessarily good values for the number of attack dice you're rolling. So, you know, if you're looking at an ace ship like Poe Dameron, which you might invest 70 to 80 points in, you're still just rolling three attack dice. Whereas I could just invest 3 points into a generic B-Wing and still get three attack dice. So that's a category where the value bar for points per attack dice, it's way better on a B-Wing, but there's so many other factors that have aces better. Yeah, they're not points per attack dice valuable, but they're way better in mobility. They're way better in initiative attack order. And damage over time is kind of an interesting trait to measure because it's both a factor you consider and it's a strategy. Where ace ships, as opposed to a lot of other ships, don't necessarily depend on shooting every turn. There are strategies where you need to keep engaging, and obviously it's good to shoot your opponent every turn, but aces give you that opportunity where you can take multiple turns, come in, hit your opponent, and then fly away and avoid damage for a few turns until you can set up that next good shot.
Right. The ace offensive strategy really just focuses on keeping their ships on the table. Because as long as you can leverage your mobility and, you know, defensive advantages, you'll eventually whittle them down.
And this is actually one of the reasons that ace lists are hard for players to learn initially. Once you get the general philosophy and you learn to be patient with aces, you see the value. But aces really depend on playing the long game sometimes. You might be setting up engagements for a long time. You might not engage initially, or your initial engagement might quickly turn into more running away and setting up more positioning. You have to be ready to adapt to that. But the general philosophy when you're flying with an ace list is that as long as my ships are on the table, I can eventually win. As long as I'm keeping them alive, even if they're not shooting, if they're not being shot at, or if they're not taking damage, eventually I'll be able to get those attack dice back on them, put damage out, and win the game.
All right, so let's get an example to, you know, to put all these thoughts together. What's an ace versus what's not an ace?
Again, keeping in mind the three characteristics we're looking at, the mobility, the initiative attack order, and the damage over time. So one good comparison I thought would be to talk about a ship we know is an ace, like Poe Dameron in a T-70, versus a ship I would not call an ace, like Ten Num in a B-Wing, as much as I love B-Wings.
Right, so I think Poe has a maneuverability advantage here because, of course, that T-70 is a pretty great maneuver dial, a lot of options. Plus, of course, Poe has those two repositioning actions and the initiative to leverage that.
Whereas conversely, if we look at Ten Num does not have a strong maneuver dial. There's speed limitations thanks to red maneuvers, even though Ten Num has a really cool pilot ability like Poe does. Not a wide range of good options for maneuvers, locked into a couple short talon rolls and a short K-turn. You can only get the one repositioning action each turn, and you're at a lower initiative. Initiative 4 is not a good place to be for an ace because without the maneuver tricks that we talked about that can break that high initiative trend, you're not going to be able to succeed well. So it looks like Poe's clearly the winner here on mobility.
Right, and initiative attack order is going to be, more of the same. Poe's engaging at initiative 6, not many people engaging before him. And when he does want to go for that initiative destroy, he has the ability to take focus, target lock, maximize offensive potential.
Whereas again, Ten Num falls short here. Coming in at initiative 4, he's going to be susceptible to even the most humble of aces, not a great pilot ability. At initiative 5, that ship can still remove 10 from the board before he gets a chance to engage.
Right, and then of course on the damage over time approach, Poe has the ability to disengage very well, use those repositioning actions, and, whittle in damage when he can.
But then again, 10 really fails in this category. Not only does he not have a lot of good ways to disengage and re-engage, but you're really going to fall short with just that one agility die where the more back and forth engagements you have, you're really going to lose out on that because you're almost guaranteed to take damage every time.
Right. And I think this just really solidified why I play Resistance over the Rebels because they have the aces.
But I'm hoping this comparison also makes it pretty clear here when we're looking at these three factors. Again, like I've said, there's a lot of small factors contributing to what is an ace, but I think these are three definite ones that you can see consistently across all ace ships. The mobility of them, the initiative attack order, and the damage over time. All right, so for the last section of this episode, a section I'm calling Flying an Ace List, or How I Stopped Jousting and Learned to Love the Whirlpool. We're going to talk about flying an ace list like the Resistance ace list we've been flying. Poe Dameron, Nian Num, both loaded out at about 75-ish points. And then that nice budget ace of Lulo Lampar. We're not going to go into specific setup strategies. We're not even going to necessarily spell out exactly what the list is, because there's a lot of variations you could do, permutations of this list. We're going to talk generally about how you avoid that jousting strategy when you're running an ace list like Poe, Nian, and Lulo.
Right. The only, you know, list building detail that matters is putting black one on Nian, because that's correct.
And this is actually a fun topic for us to talk about, because we actually got inspired to record this episode from a forum post. We saw someone who had listened to us talk about not jousting and wasn't sure how to avoid that tendency. They understood what jousting was, but they felt that strong inclination to do it, just because we all felt that, because that's how we started playing the game. So we wanted to give a little bit of a strategy here. Again, we're not saying an ace list like the one we're flying is the only strategy opposed to the ineffective strategy of jousting. There's a lot of other list types out there. You can run efficiency lists, you can run control lists, you can run swarms. But those lists all have their own special set of rules. So we're covering one specific area of X-Wing, and obviously we can dive into those other lists in future episodes.
Right. And, you know, this has taken me a long time to figure out, you know, okay, I told myself stop jousting. It's, you know, never just that simple. The maneuvering side of X-Wing is very difficult. And, you know, Tim and I are both still learning there.
Learning a strategy, especially a strategy that is new to you, does actually take time. So I would encourage you, as you listen to us talk about this, you know, always take to a degree what we're saying to a grain of salt. There's not absolute rules. We're not going to be able to give you a flow chart for what decisions to make in a given situation. But try to learn and get better as you play games. And we mentioned it earlier, don't get caught up on, oh, I lost a game because of a couple key bad dice rolls. Always look at your games and try and take away, okay, how could I have improved? And what decisions did I make that ended up not paying off the way I hoped they would? And how can I make better decisions in the future?
Right. So, you know, if we're telling you the success of that is to not joust, well, that means that you're not going to fly at your opponent, which seems pretty simple. And, you know, for the first few turns, it kind of is.
Yeah, so if we're avoiding jousting with an ace list, which, as we defined, jousting is basically just flying your ships at your opponent, rolling dice, and hoping for good outcomes. If you're not doing that, you pretty much create a binary scenario for what your opponent's going to do. If you're not flying directly at them, they are either going to fly away from you as well, or they're going to fly at you.
Right, and so if they fly away from you, well, then you create a scenario that has a lot of different names. You can call it a pinwheel, a whirlpool, or, you know, a vortex of death. But this describes, you know, both players circling around the board, trying to gain a positional advantage.
And this could run clockwise, counterclockwise, depending on the decisions you make, or I guess what hemisphere you're on. That might be an urban legend, though. Either way, you're both going to be circling around the center of the board, where you're going to have that array of asteroids in there. So this is actually kind of comparable to what an actual dogfight would be back in, you know, World War II style. Basically, ships not wanting to fly directly at each other because they'll just both get destroyed. They enter this scenario where they're flying in a circle and someone's hoping to cut in and be able to cut in faster and get some damage in. But finding the right moment to do that is really important.
Right, and you know, this can take a while. This can take up a good portion of your game time. You know, maybe close to 40 or 50 minutes in a 75-minute match. You know, I think it speaks to how important maneuvering is if both players are willing to spend, you know, two-thirds of the game trying to give them an advantage in it.
And I think this is actually one of the contributing factors as to why people are drawn to jousting strategies, where if you don't enjoy the setup of, you know, going around in a circle, waiting for the right moment, making really cautious long-term decisions. If you don't enjoy that, you might feel that inclination to just, well, I'm going to cut in now, I'm going to start rolling attack dice, and I'm going to hope for the best. But if you're playing this game, honestly, if you're playing this game at a tournament level, you might enter scenarios where I have to fly around in a circle for 40 to 50 minutes. I'm not slow playing. I'm not intentionally going slow. This is just we're moving at parallel speeds around the board. That might be how long it takes to set up before you get to that initial engagement.
Right. And so how you get an advantage in, you know, this whirlpool scenario is when we talked about the ability to leverage your maneuvering advantage. So here, you know, having an initiative advantage means, you know, you can see how fast your opponent, you know, is curving around the asteroids, and you can adjust your speed using your repositioning actions.
And if you're in a scenario where you have two parallel lists that have parallel speed and maneuver options, it might just really become a game of, well, at what point in the asteroid arrangement am I going to turn in and try and cut off my opponent? But if you have a speed advantage of your opponent, you can actually run around and end up chasing them and getting behind them, which is actually something our Resistance Aces list can do pretty well, given all the four or five straights followed by boosts. I've played a lot of games where I start with the Whirlpool and I end up getting Lulo right behind my opponent into a really good spot to start laying out some damage over time.
Right. Those five straights followed up by a boost gets you behind your opponent very quickly.
And we're not going to give a specific example of when you should cut in, when you should chase. The thing to really keep in mind here, if you do enter this Whirlpool scenario, is be evaluating. Be ready to play the long game if that's necessary to getting you a win. Be ready to play that long-term strategy of waiting just for the right moment. And just be mindful of your decisions there. Am I going to put my aces in a vulnerable position where they're going to take a lot of damage? But of course, there's always the flip side. If your opponent doesn't also fly away and you guys don't end up in the Whirlpool scenario, they might head straight through the asteroids. They might cut right across the board and fly right at you.
Right. So if your opponent's flying at you, that's going to be a little tougher. That means you're going to have to track how fast they're going and where you anticipate their firing arcs are going to land. That means you have to think a little bit more in the planning phase and anticipate your opponent's maneuvers. And if you guess correctly, you can identify safe spots for your aces to land.
Now, even though this can be a very threatening scenario where you chose not to joust your opponent and they fly right at you, if you end up in the wrong position, they get a bunch of guns on you, suddenly you're in that 4B-wing scenario where they might roll all hits, they might just decimate you. But there are some advantages to them doing this. Typically, they're going to have to cut through the center of the board to do this. And that means that opens up a lot of opportunities for them to break their formation so their ships get spread apart and can't focus fire on you. And it also opens up a lot of opportunities for them to make a poor maneuver choice that you can react to and suddenly get on their flank, get right behind them, or just avoid them at range completely.
Right. If your opponent's choosing to fly at you, the asteroids are going to be your best friend. That is your buffer. The other thing you want to do, though, is spread your ships out. This allows you to wait and have your opponent commit to one of your ships, because eventually they're going to bring their arcs on one of your ships.
And you'll actually see this in a lot of ace list play, whether it's the Resistance Aces, you can check out some stream games, or the really popular list right up until the point change, running Redline and Soontir and Whisper. You'll often see these ships spread apart at the start, and then when they finally engage, sure, one of their ships gets more or less focused on, but the other two are right there ready to follow up and start laying out damage. And that's a point where you start to make decisions about exchanges, right? You want to, whatever ship your opponent has committed to as a target, you want to get the other two ships you have in there ready to shoot. So, you know, you'll take some damage. Maybe you'll even lose that ship. But if you can follow that up with multiple turns of shooting at your opponent's ships, that might end up to be a favorable trade. Because, you know, I don't mind losing Nian if it counters out two of my opponent's more expensive ships.
Right. And the advantage you get for spreading your ships out is, you know, okay, I get to identify who my opponent's targeting, which means, you know, I'm going to put that ship in a defensive position while I get to choose to put my other ships in a very offensive position where you're mitigating the damage dealt to one of your ships while maximizing the damage your other ships are dealing. And I think just having that information lets you make those more extreme decisions.
And this is actually one, I think, the last point I want to talk about when we're talking about aces here, the general philosophy of it, is that we've talked about avoiding the joust. That's a huge part of aces right there. If you could avoid the joust and start to make wise decisions about when to engage, that's huge. When you do have to engage or get close to engagement, the thing you want to keep in mind is limiting opportunities to take damage. It's very easy to, when you roll really bad green dice, even if you've got, you know, really good mods, you just completely blank out. It's really easy to blame the dice there. Well, the less frequently you roll green dice, the less you're dependent on variance.
Right. And I think it's, you know, a little too extreme to say, well, just always dodge arc. Don't ever get shot at. You know, your opponent's pretty good. They're going to at least get, you know, a few firing arcs on you. So, you know, try to mitigate that is our advice. If you can limit it to just one shot at your ace a turn, that you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, there's general rules here. Again, not hard rules, but, you know, if you only get shot at once per turn, that's a great way to start. Or if you position yourself, though, so that it's a couple weak obstructed attacks, that's also a good scenario to be. You're really looking at the damage over time factor here. This is where damage over time comes into play versus your opponent, where you want your ships to be doing even just a little bit of damage over time and minimizing the amount of damage coming back. Because like I said, the less frequently you actually have to roll green dice, the less you're at the whim of variance, you know? And I agree with you, Carson. It's not practical to tell people just to dodge arcs all the time. You're assuming that you're going to play an opponent who's going to be able to position and make the engagement happen. Firing arcs on even small base ships cover a pretty wide area. So eventually you're probably going to get shot at.
Right. And you know, if your ship's only getting shot at by one target, well, ships are sort of designed for that. You know, you have modification, you have your focus or evade token that you took. You know, for example, you know, my Nian has elusive, Lulo has lone wolf. So I get a reroll, you know, one greed die a turn. So I'm pretty well set up to survive one shot. Anything after that, though, and I've run out of mods and I'm going to start taking pretty serious damage.
And I'm not really one to, again, blame variance for the outcomes of games. But when you do get into scenarios where variance is going to impact your success, one really important thing to keep in mind is that if you roll red dice and you get bad variance, you blank out. That is annoying. That can be time consuming, but it's not going to necessarily damage your ship, you know, beyond the calculated risk of trying to initiative kill someone. But if you put yourself in a scenario where you're rolling a lot of green dice, multiple times of rolling green dice makes it more likely you're going to have that really bad variance round. And unlike rolling bad red dice, rolling bad green dice can be lethal.
Right. So, you know, our tip for, you know, something that you can measure to help you improve the game, you know, is not counting the times that you blanked out, but instead count the number of times you pick up green dice in a game. And if you can, you know, track and see that number go down, I'm pretty sure your win rate's going to go up pretty correspondingly.
So hopefully after all this, we're giving you a better idea of how to fly an ace list, mostly how to stop jousting, because I think that's going to be the core of what we want to communicate with this episode. Even if you choose not to fly an ace list, really you want to bring your strategies away from depending on that variance, flying your ship straight at your opponent, and start to think a little bit more critically and try to develop strategies that don't depend on you needing to roll well. If you are interested in trying out an ace list, we're going to pull up one of the variants we've been toying around with for the Poe, Nian, and Lulo resistance lists. This will be a good way if you want to start practicing these strategies, see how they work, and you know, see if we're wrong about all this and you think there's better ways to do it. Let us know, but you can check that out. That'll be up in the link for this episode on our Facebook page, facebook.com/RadioTCX. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you do want to like our Facebook page, you can go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX. Like it, leave a comment, even leave a review on Facebook saying what you like about the show.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the podcast, we really appreciate when you leave 5-star reviews on iTunes. Those iTunes reviews are actually really important. So if you want to support the show in a really simple way, please head on over there, hit that 5-star, and even throw a comment down saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested to listen.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us. And thank you to everyone who has supported the show already.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
Stop jousting!